Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, the podcast where wealth becomes your greatest ally in achieving your dreams.
Hey guys, welcome back. You're listening to the second part of last week's episode. Let's jump back in.
I want to talk a little bit about the insurance products that we use and the approach to those things. There's always a give and take in conversations with folks about, you know, whether I should buy term insurance, permanent insurance, or cash value insurance is a bad investment, so forth and so on. I'm going to start off by saying the first thing that I would like to see happen in any client's life is that they appreciate the need to have life insurance, to have the right amount, to have the right kind based on their preferences once they get the full information. And the kicker that I throw in is I want my client's life insurance to be in effect on the day you graduate. That's the word I use. On the worst day in some respects, on the worst day you'll ever have, I hope that insurance is in effect. So I'd like to hear some of your wisdom on that.
Yeah. So for us, you know, for me, philosophically, I believe the most important thing is that our clients be protected. You know, that has to come first. And when we talk about protection, if you were a new client of mine or our firm, we just want to make sure that you're fully protected. We never buy that brand new Lexus for $60,000 and call our property and casualty carrier and say, just insure it for $30,000. We insure it for its full value. And for human beings, we think there's a formula called human life value, a human life value calculator, which says what our value is economically. And that value should always be considered and purchased if at all possible. But we don't think about the emotional value. What is the value of being a son, a brother, a father, a child, a business owner has, how much more it is. So we can figure out our economic value, a multiple of our earnings, right? If we're in our 30s, it's 20 to 30 times what we earn just to keep our family whole. But money won't keep them whole alone. And it doesn't go away. Some people say, well, I need it for the next 18 years because my kid's 3 and he'll be out of college when he's 21. But I would say at that point in time, right, there's another need for it, a reason for it. So exactly what you said, we want insurance, right, on the day we graduate. We want insurance. We want to make sure it's there for our family, but it does so much more for us. You know, I never had children and I own millions of dollars of traditional whole life insurance. And it's by far my greatest asset. You talk about graduating, the first thing I thought of is I've graduated 15 times because, you know, I've had times where I've been scared and said, let me make sure my protection's in place. I've had times where I've had to dip into it, unfortunately, once to take my greatest asset, my cash value, my life insurance policy, and split my assets due to my divorce. And I look and say that when that day came and when my attorney looked at me, she said, why wouldn't you just give her half of your policies? And I said, she's entitled to half of my cash value. She's entitled to a piece of death benefit mm-hmm. while I'm paying matrimonial support. But this asset stays mine. This is the greatest asset that I own. And, you know, my return is tax deferred 5%. You know, I've never paid a dime in tax on it. And when she asked me how I was going to go about getting money to settle my divorce, you know, I said many ways. I could call up Guardian and ask them to wire money into my account tomorrow. I could walk into a bank if it makes more sense and use it as a tier one, tier A asset, and they would gladly lend me money at their current rate against it. I could withdraw the dividends that I've been accumulating for the past 25 years. Mm-hmm. So the benefits of whole life insurance, the benefit of insurance, right? People say, I'll self-insure. And when you think about the how, what a misnomer that is for life insurance. You know, so I'm going to buy term insurance until I retire. And at that point in time, I'm going to have retirement assets for my spouse should something happen to me. But we want those retirement assets to live off of. So what helps us live off of those assets better than knowing that there's a promise at the end replace those assets with a death benefit, with a tax-free death benefit. So I want life insurance forever, not for me, but for others, so I can live my life and live it to the fullest and know that something's going to come into my family's world, my charity's world, you know, my anybody who really has meaning to me, and it's going to allow me to live the fullest retirement possible.
There's one thing you said about the way I describe it is people thinking in a linear fashion. Well, I'm 40 years old today. I'll keep a term life policy until I'm 60. And then presumably I won't need life insurance anymore. And that's the way they think of it. They don't think of it as cash for future delivery. If they thought of it that way, they might think of it differently. But thinking of it in those linear terms, once I get to 60, the thought is I won't need life insurance anymore because my house will absolutely be paid for. That may or may not be true. I won't have any more debts at 60, right? I'll be living the idyllic life. I'll have $3, 4, or 5 million or whatever the number is someplace else, whether it's a 401k, other investments, I'll own some businesses, but I won't need life insurance. And they keep on thinking of it as life insurance. Of course, I come back and say, do you think you'll be making a little bit more money then than you are now? Do you think you'd still want to substitute some asset, let's say it's life insurance, for that income if it's lost when you're 60? I mean, a few years ago, when I was 67, my underwriter called me up and said, you know, you're eligible for another million. What does that mean? Well, that means my income continued to go up. It has continued to go up. And he said, "You're based on your multiple, you can have another million or so. And would you like it?" Yep. I kind of knew where to sign, but I said, where do I sign? Right?
Right.
I mean, it's obvious to me that your multiple, no matter what your age, no matter what your income, if your income is going to go up at all, your multiple times your income is going to be a bigger number when you're 65 than it was when you're 30. You couldn't buy all the insurance that you're going to have at 65 at 30. So if you're continuing to think my responsibility for all things is going to diminish the older I get, there are so many things that talk against that, that mitigate against that. I mean, I don't know if you're going to have your kids go off and get married, have a few kids of their own, their marriage not work out, and then your kid comes back. Now, that hasn't happened to me by the grace of God, but you know, it's happened to some people I've known, and they want it to be available and be a support in whatever way they determined. They want to be a support to their kids. So I don't know what your financial obligations are going to be. I don't have that crystal ball that's that clear. So I don't know what that's going to be. I do know, like you said, I still want to be able to replace this income. And that need is going to continue indefinitely. So you kind of have to have the understanding and the openness that life is going to change, right? As if it's ever been the same 2 days in a row, because it hasn't.
You know, you said you talked about paying off the house, and I went somewhere different with it in my mind. And that is, you know, we work for 30 years and have a mortgage and pay off our house. And, you know, we have back in the old days, they had, you know, burning the mortgage parties where they would take the mortgage and put it into a fireplace. How many people that day call up their property and casualty insurer and say, my house is paid off. I don't need insurance anymore on this. Right? It's insane. It's insane. Now, listen, I could take the risk myself. And when we get 65 and talk to our clients, we say that the ideal amount of life insurance at age 65 is equal to your assets.
Yes.
So you can spend it all. Spend it all. And, you know, if you own the right amount of participating whole life insurance, then you don't ever have to worry about dying and leaving your spouse or your kids or future generations, you know, without. Because they've got the life insurance that pops up, you know, and allows them to live, right, with all of the assets that you lived with. So it's hugely important. And I don't think there's anybody that wouldn't want that. The problem is there aren't enough Joe Pantozzis out there that have this, to have this conversation and explain why they can have it and get a reasonable return, have access to cash, have the death benefit, have that plan come true in the event of a disability, have that plan be available in the event of a long-term care, avoid taxes, pay estate taxes by putting it into a trust later in life. All the things that life insurance does. Term insurance protects a certain period of time. Hugely important, hugely valuable. We need it. It's protection.
Yeah, for sure.
If we can take our saving, which is the most important thing we can do and learn very young, is savings rate trumps rate of return. We could prove that mathematically all day long. You know, you're better off saving 10% than you are saving 5% and getting a 10% return on it. So whole life checks all the boxes. We didn't talk about creditor protection.
Sure.
You know, and all the other things that life insurance, you know, gives us the benefits.
I'm going to pivot for just a second and say that for those of you who are thinking about looking at this career, or for those of you who are maybe stuck, maybe you're licensed, maybe you've had your toe in the water and you want to get serious. For people who are serious and maybe you're not in a place where you're a right fit. There have been some major companies that have been bought out and agents have wound up losing their contracts and so forth. I'm not soliciting all of you, but the most important thing I can say is the market needs you. Americans need more advisors who care. There aren't enough good advisors. People are going to need advisors, coaches, facilitators, cheerleaders like us forever. There's never going to come up a time where financial literacy is going to take over in this country and people are going to know what to do and we'll be able to buy life insurance out of vending machines. As Nelson Nash once mentioned, he says, if people understood how whole life actually worked, they'd be buying it out of vending machines. It's never going to happen because people need to be able to learn where the resources are. They need to be able to see the difference and be shown the difference between advertising, between media, between just talk, and how these things actually work. And that's one thing that I enjoy going back and doing is verifying my sources. You know, we talk about life insurance having been kind of invented back in the 1750s. And, life insurance companies didn't exactly have the formula down pat until the later, maybe the mid 1800s, where they figured out, well, you can't be raising the rates for people because as they get older and they're healthy, they're just going to leave you and go buy a policy someplace else. And the only people that are going to stay are going to be the sick ones. We call that adverse selection. So companies went out of business because they hadn't figured out you need to design a product that's level premium for the entire lifetime. And I mean, it literally was 180 years ago that they figured this out. I mean, this is program and a product that works the way it's been designed, the actuarial, the economics, the marketing, the legal aspect of it. It's an amazing product when you look at it from the technical side, because it's all been packaged for us and we don't have to do the heavy lifting and we don't have to worry about the correlation to the stock market. We don't have to worry about whether the stock market takes a 25% hit and my life insurance lost 25%. Doesn't happen.
It actually allows us to participate in the stock market. If we own the right amount of whole life insurance and that asset is on our books, it's sitting in cash. It's guaranteed.
Yep. Yep.
Can't go down. As a matter of fact, not only can it not go down, it's guaranteed to go up, a whole life product. It has to happen a year from today unless you pull money out of it. It has to go up. And what it allows us to do is it allows us, when I'll sit down with successful you know, real estate people worth $20, $30 million. And they'll say, Lyle, why would I want to buy life insurance if I can buy real estate and get 10, 15, 20% rates of return? I say owning the life insurance allows you to buy the real estate. If you own the life insurance, you can be speculative because you know that if you die and that real estate, and we've seen it, we're both from Las Vegas, we saw it, mm-hmm. right? Property values going from $1 million to $500,000 overnight. If that happens, we're okay because we've got the life insurance, we've got the cash, allowing us to reinvest in the market, allowing us to do stupid things that I'm not even going to talk about. You know, things that, you know, we laugh at our clients for doing. It's okay if they got the life insurance, the permanent life insurance, the guaranteed, the promise-based product sitting on the side. So I tell my realtor friends, I'm not trying to convince you to stop investing in real estate. I want to encourage you to continue doing what you're doing and let you know that when the tax bill comes to your wife on the day you die or to your kids on the day she dies, they're going to say, we're okay. We don't have to have a fire sale. We don't have to worry about taxes, tenants, leases. Got this life insurance, you know? So what I said at the very, very beginning, you know, I was afforded opportunities and that's what we do. We give others opportunities to, you know, be great savers and invest in real estate, invest in other areas because they own this great asset called life insurance.
Yeah. It's not instead. I don't want to buy real estate instead.
Right.
This is an and asset. And if you're buying real estate, if you're owning businesses, we can help you do more of what you already like to do. You like to put your money into serial entrepreneurial opportunities? Absolutely. You're always going to need a line of credit that's going to come from someplace. As Nelson Nash would say, you finance everything you buy. You either borrow money from somebody else and pay the interest to them, or you give up the earnings that you would have earned when you pay cash. And so all we do is help people become more efficient by controlling the banking function and getting more of those dollars to be flowing toward them instead of flowing away from them. And, you know, it's funny, and I've said this over decades, the more I tell the story, the more policies I buy. So we have a portfolio of policies. I started out in my 20s, and I still own some of the policies that I bought when I was in my 20s. And I've continued to add to those policies, as well as for my spouse, for my kids, for my siblings, for our parents, for key employees, for business associates and business partners of mine. And every time I tell the story, I just remind myself, hey, you know, I have some term insurance. I want to go convert it. I'm going to have an age change next month. So guess what I'm doing? I'm going to be converting the balance of my term insurance.
I don't regret any decision I've ever made in terms of buying whole life. I could tell you that I could, if you have another hour in your podcast, talk to you about the other investments or financial decisions that I've made that I do regret. But I'm okay because I own all that life insurance and have all that cash value.
Yeah, I could write 10 books on how to fail financially.
Absolutely.
I could only write one on how to succeed.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking also about the planning that goes along with it. What we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, making sure that, you know, those documents are correct and partners agree and key employees are taken care of and people's incomes are insured and all the other things that we do, checking documents, you know, looking at tax returns, reading buy-sell agreements, providing business valuations. There's nobody else that does that. Their accountants don't do it. Their attorneys don't do it. Their attorneys, you know, file a document and put it away. It's up to us to look at those things, make sure that they're up to date and in alignment with what they want to accomplish.
Well, I tell you, this is such a good time for me to be with you, to share thoughts and emotions and passion about a business that we love. And I hope we get to do it again. And I'm going to continue to encourage our clients, have them follow, have them listen, have them call with questions. And we'll be happy to look at plans that you have in place, the documents that you have in place. You want to get a second set of eyes, second opinion, to look at what you have in place. We're happy to look at it. We're happy to tell you you're doing great. Maybe all you need to do is expand and own more of it. So I want to thank you, Lyle. You're a great friend. You're a great person. I love your heart. And I love what you've done for yourself, for your family, and for this industry. You are a champion of this industry, and we need more people like you.
Thanks, Joe.
So everyone, thanks. This is Make Your Wealth Work, and I hope you continue to follow us. Talk to you soon.
This is the PodcastFactory.com.